How can we navigate through uncertainty, collective fear, collective stress, and ride this crisis as an opportunity for profound evolutionary change? Welcome to the Vital Veda Show. Thanks so much for joining me. I am your host, Dylan Smith. I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner and holistic health educator based in Sydney, Australia, but sharing the love, sharing the wisdom all around the world through these various social means, which is very helpful right now in a time because not just for me, but the fact that we have social means to become aware of a broader perspective of the divine nature plan, nature's divine plan. Much as it doesn't seem everything happening is very divine now, it is, and that's what I want to open your mind up to. And this is why I called on my friend Gary Gorrow to enlighten us about and to bring us awareness onto the greater perspective of what's happening right now and gain a perception of reality and a perception that will, you know, that I intend from this, from gaining this perception, that you feel more calm, that you feel more comfortable and more powerful in what's going on right now, because this is ultimately going to create harmony in the environment and the collective. Of course, I'm talking about the current pandemic which we are facing, COVID-19, coronavirus. And I personally, as you'll hear me kind of say to Gary, having struggled with all the negative and evil forces that are playing out right now. So not so much related with the virus itself as a medical fear, but more about the whole collective and the hidden agenda. Anyway, we're going to get into this. I'm going to tell you about my dear friend Gary Gorrow. He's a pretty amazing meditation teacher and holder of Vedic wisdom. I've known Gary for quite some time, many years, and he's worked with thousands of people from all walks of life. And he's very passionate about empowering people with techniques that enable them to re-engineer their lives inside and out. And his approach synthesizes the best of modern science and ancient consciousness-based practices. He's a practical and down-earth character, that's for sure, and he really dedicates himself solely to the work he does. He's a Vedic meditation practitioner, and really, he's very renowned in this area. So you're going to enjoy what he's got to offer, the wisdom. He also dispels the reality of what's happening more on the relative level and kind of paints a bit of a picture of the evil forces at play. But then ultimately what, you know, we intend to do in this podcast and what I really called him on for is to give you a greater perception of how to deal with this evil and the darkness that is pervading right now, and the virus particularly, and more specifically, as we discussed, from all the stuff that's going on in the collective, in the corporations, governments, all this stuff. You'll learn about it. So enjoy the show. If you want to check out the other podcasts, if you're new to this, I mean, if you haven't listened to all the episodes, they're all pretty epic. I freaking love this show, and I'm allowed to say that because it's not me doing all the talking at all. Like, there's been like, I don't know, two or three solo episodes, but mostly it's me interviewing experts in the field of consciousness, spirituality, relationships, health, Vedic wisdom, so much. So check them out. We've got, you know, the best of the best, really, and there's so much goodness coming up. A few of the guests we have coming up is Mark Cohen again, Professor Mark Cohen, a repeat guest, really one of the pioneers of medicine in Australia health, and he really talks about sparking a wellness pandemic. So, you know, it was easy for us to go into disease and fear mode suddenly and radically, but let's radically create a wellness pandemic, and this is what's going to arise from what's been going on. And then, of course, he couldn't resist. He talks about water. We talk about water in detail. And then we got one coming up with Dr. Jessica Petros about stealth infections. We got one coming up with someone else who I'm not going to mention because it's too special, and he's a very well-known man in the field of relationships. I'll just give you a hint. He's the most well-known and successful and famous dude in the relationship realm. So that's coming up. And yeah, anyhow, haven't even recorded that one yet. In a couple of days I will, but don't want to get ahead to myself too much. Anyway, check out the episodes. If you want to support the show, you know, these podcasts have just really been infiltrated with a lot more work recently, the Vital Veda podcast specifically. So if you want to join, share this episode, share it with someone who is, you know, confronted by these evil forces of what's going on and uncomfortable with the whole situation. Share any other thing that's relevant. Just text it to them, screenshot on your Instagram. You know, we really got to bring in the light in this collective, and so that then the darkness will dissipate. and all the other wonderful episodes, you know, if that's relevant for anyone, there's really awesome topics. And of course, if you want to, you know, rate the podcast, leave a review, that would be great. You can also donate if you want on the Wider Beta website, or go buy a product. That will help. By the way, did you know every single sale in Vital Beta, whether it's a product, a service, or treatment, a consultation, a lecture fee, teaching fee, 50% of all that is donated, without a doubt. I don't miss a cent because it's related with the karma. So that's what, you know, that is donated to people who need medicine. We give them Ayurveda medicine, and also to Vedic technology called Yagya, which is a certain technology performed by traditional Indian caste in order to trigger laws of nature to support the collective. So every time you support Vital Beta financially, 50% of that is being donated. All right, much love to you. Enjoy the show.
So Gary, I want to address the fear and the collective consciousness at the moment. One, I say there's kind of two types of fear. One is the like a medical fear of the virus itself, which I think really is can easily be supersede, or I won't say easily, but there's a lot of, you know, just looking into the reality of the virus and learning about viruses and learning about the I guess truth of the statistics and everything that can be transcended. And but then there's the fear of the direction that society's going in. And there's different aspects to that. One is, of course, like economic. And then there's also something that I guess I've been a bit more uncomfortable with recently is the, and a bit of a harsh word, but the fascism that's occurring. You know, we're in now mass lockdown, or you could call mass house arrest. You know, my friend's sister got threatened with $1,000 fine for meditating by herself on a park bench. And another guy got fined for eating lunch on a park bench in Bondi Beach, $1,000. So, you know, if that's not fascism, and it's not the police's fault because they're doing what they're told to do. And there's a lot of, yeah, so, and then when you look at the, you know, creating mandatory vaccines, when, you know, who said vaccines are even a way to treat it? I mean, a flu vaccine doesn't work. All these other. So, yeah, I think just to see, you know, we are in such a state of unknown right now, and it seems like there's a horizon of vast possibilities, and definitely there's wonderful things that are coming from this already with the environment, the CO2, you know, reduction. There's a lot, but I just, yeah, perhaps want to give people a glimpse, an optimistic glimpse, and also to put their awareness on that so that they can move towards that and what people can do. So thanks, Gary.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the secret to all this, is staying optimistic and nourishing the positive and nourishing what's possible. And I absolutely share your sentiments, and I know I'm not alone. I was in the surf yesterday, and a friend of mine who'd come up from, you know, I was surfing out in Byron Bay, just to give some context to people, and a friend of mine from Byron was from Bondi, had come up, and we just happened to, you know, be in the ocean together. And he just very politely said, "Gaz, I've been meaning to call you. I really wanted to get your view on what's happening right now." I said, "Oh, yeah? What, in what regards?" He says, "Well, are you a little bit concerned by what's happening?" And he was just tapping on the window very gently. And I say, What do you mean, concerns about what? And he said, "Don't you think it's all a little bit suspicious?" And I said, "What, you mean that there's a hidden agenda to all this?" He goes, "Yeah, but I can't say that to any of my friends because they get really offended." So, I mean, yourself, me, him, and, you know, literally millions of other people on the planet right now are starting to question, well, is there a deeper agenda to what's happening, or is, you know, this virus, is it being leveraged? You know, you never want to let a crisis go to waste if you're someone who's into, you know, accumulating more power or removing civil liberties or, you know, freedoms. And so there seems to be this, you know, this ratcheting up effect that happens. You know, we look at what happened after September 11, there was this massive sort of reduction in people's freedoms and liberties. You know, we saw the security levels going up and then these new laws being enacted and basically giving greater power and authority for governments and institutions to do things in the interests of national security. Like, we look at what's happening to Julian Assange, like, that's been a 9-10 year battle, and that is just so inhumane, the treatment that man's received, all for what? Being a journalist, doing his job and revealing the way in which governments were essentially violating the rights of the population by spying on them and selling information, doing a multitude of other things. So I'm with you. I think, you know, a lot of people are waking up and just starting to question the media's narrative, like, why is it so extreme? And, you know, like, we're happy to continue to have this conversation if you want to, but.
Yeah, I mean, I see, and I know that majority of the people are not, you know, are still in fear, and when you're in fear, you can't think clearly, your immune system is compromised as well because you're in flight or fight state, and literally, like, your job for your body is to go to the skin, go to the periphery, the blood goes there, and, you know, fight or flight, not, you know, mediate the, you know, vascular system and purify virus, whatever. So when people are in that state, that survival mode, that, you know, they can't think straight, and it's very easy for them to be influenced. If someone says, you know, mandatory vaccine, yeah, do it, whatever it takes, you know, stay at home, fine, I'll do whatever, like,
yeah, but yeah, as long as it takes me out of lockdown, I'll do it, I will accept, yeah, I will give my rights and my sovereignty, as long as, you know, we end this hell that we're kind of caught in right now. The problem with fear is that it really shuts off our executive functions, our creativity, our ability to innovate, come up with solutions, and really it disempowers us ultimately. That's the problem with it. So there's a lot of confused and disempowered people right now, and I think there's essentially a gift in that process for people if they're able to sort of see it for what it is. Because, you know, we live our day-to-day lives based on patterns, and most of the patterns by which we operate under were pre-established before we came to this planet. They were set down by generations long ago and just carried forward, essentially. So, you know, people need to really check in with the way that human beings interact with one another on the planet and realize it wasn't always the way it was done. There wasn't careers and jobs and universities and mortgages and institutions and governments and corporations and all these things in traditional cultures. You know, and I learned the other day about an instance where Columbus was doing his explorations around the globe. He came upon a Polynesian tribe, and he said they were the most physically beautiful and spiritually beautiful people that he'd ever met in his entire life. They were so generous, kind, loving. He said they didn't know ownership. It was a shared culture. And if you expressed adoration for something that they had, they would, without thinking about it, just give it to you, because they just saw how much pleasure that thing gave you and they wanted you to experience more of that. So anyway, Columbus, in his writings back to, you know, when ships would return back to his country, he would give them letters. So he was communicating with the king and queen, and he said in one of his letters, immediately after revealing that these were the most beautiful, sacred people that he'd ever met, he said, "Send me 50 good men and I could enslave these people in an instant." So it seems that there are people who have those sorts of longings to have power and control. And there are others who really want to live in a cooperative manner. But our society as we know it has been constructed on every man and woman for themselves. We live in nuclear families. We have competition, not cooperation. We have businesses that are out to, you know, grow at the cost of others, typically. We have multinationals, et cetera. And so more and more and more we're finding power and control going into the hands of fewer and fewer people. And this goes along with wealth also. When you have, you know, eight people having as much wealth as, you know, 4 billion people, this is a serious issue. And how did a society ever evolve to the point where it's okay for a handful of people to hoard massive amounts of wealth while the rest of the population is really just scratching for a meal? So, you know, the way human society essentially has been designed, and it's natural when you get population growth, et cetera, that you need certain systems. But what we've been witnessing over a long period of time is the systems are failing us. Our economic system, our health system, our environmental systems, our management systems, everything is showing cracks. You know, and scientists are saying that we're heading towards a sixth mass extinction. In fact, we've entered it. The planet just cannot sustain the amount of consumption that's happening. And, you know, it's very clear to anyone who's paying attention to those statistics that they're alarming, yet humans' response to those has been very little, because we're consumed by our own individual needs to pay our rent, feed our families, pay our mortgages, have our work. We get consumed in these, in our little worlds. And so the system which we rely on for, you know, the benefit of ourselves and our planet isn't actually set up to care for those things. It's more designed to feed itself, to empower itself and disempower others. So I'd say at this particular time, if this is a situation that has been engineered, and there are many people who think it has, setting that aside, if it's a situation that can be leveraged, if you're someone who's into centralizing power and control, what a great opportunity. But at the same time, for those who want to see the world change for the positive and be part of that movement, now there's never been a greater time, because we have so many people questioning the narrative and so many people wanting and being confronted by life as we know it is never going to be the same. So as long as we can see through, you know, all the smoke and mirrors and all the media sensationalism, I think people, once they step out of fear, will realize, well, I'm a Gandhi in embryo. I'm a Martin Luther King in seed form. I'm someone that has innate human power. And Gandhi on his own was not powerful. People think he was, you know, this incredibly powerful being. He was powerful because he had the support of many people. And so a human movement, human power empowered movement, will be able to really rewrite an entire system for humanity. All we need to do is see that, you know, we have to do such a thing, and we have to take command of it and put people in place who are actually going to be serving the people rather than getting the people to be of service to them. Because you look at, for example, the US seems to be a big focus, you know, for Australians as well. We're always hearing about what's going on in US politicking and whatnot, whereas we know very little about what's going on in Russia, in Peru, in Argentina, or even Indonesia. But it seems to be that Australia, for whatever reason, is very aligned to the affairs of the US, which kind of blows my mind. But anyway, why I'm choosing the US here is for that reason. You look at how much they spend on weaponry, on military industrial complex. It's enormous. Yet how much do they spend on healthcare and education? And if you look at that whole money-making machine, you know, Bob Dylan wrote about it in his song The Masters of War, and Peter Joseph, who I think is one of the most brilliant minds on the planet with regards to these matters, completely self-taught, he really broke down our industrial economic systems and came up with new plans and new options moving forward as a humanity. But essentially, in the US, you have this huge military industrial complex, which you'd say is a business, essentially. And what that complex needs is continued conflict. And the conflict's never meant to end, it's just meant to continue, because it's a massive revenue raiser. And who pays for the war? The taxpayers.
Yeah.
So you've got this system which is basically all wrong. So you have these people paying for these wars when that taxpayer money could be redirected towards regenerating the planet, could be invested in clean technologies, could be providing health and education. So the whole world has just over time lost its way. And people, sages and saints have been warning about this for a long time, same with mystics and even scientists and practical human beings. And I think we're all seeing it right now is our planet is really going through a crisis, a systems crisis.
Yeah. And I think it's really someone has to just do some, you know, decent research and hear the news from perhaps alternative sources to the mainstream and people who are doing authentic research and exposure. And I think that, I mean, it's so bluntly obvious when you look into it of like how all the statistics are being manipulated and all the things with the medical side of things is, I think it's just going to be a big realization for people and be like, well, actually, this is a lot of it is bullshit and to not trust these people. Mm. But all this is very, and this is what I want to get the bigger picture of things, because even myself doing the research, I still haven't fathomed how to approach it, because I get like it's very fascinating, but it's also very dark. So, and it's what we call in the Vedas very karma khan. So it's all very on the relative. I want to get a bigger picture of what's happening, and definitely, you know, knowledge eliminates fear. So knowing about what's happening specifically, this is why I've been delving into the research of the reality of the situation, is because when you understand the reality of the situation and that the virus is in such a threat at not nearly close to what they're exposing, then you eliminate the fear of being infected medically.
Mm.
Yeah, let's go into the bigger thing. And also, before we do, or including in that, how do we react to, I guess, this evil force or this negative forces of nature? Because we don't want to retaliate, because then you can lower yourself to their level or resist. So how do we, deal with these negative forces?
Yeah, and I very much appreciate where you're coming from, because I've experienced myself, and even in recently, I went down the rabbit hole once upon a time, and I had to basically retreat, because as you start to move into that world, it feels like you descend into a very shadowy and dark place as you start to uncover, you know, this sort of dark side of humanity and our history, and even, you know, our present history. And that's quite dangerous, because by reviewing the darkness and destruction and all of that, you end up sort of becoming that yourself. Consciousness, as we know, has this tendency to become and identify that which it's sort of witnessing or thinking about or perceiving. So we need to be doing so with a deeper understanding, which is, you know, what we'll explore now. And it's, you know, ultimately we should be very empowered by the whole situation, ultimately. And as we start to flesh this out, we'll understand why. And very much, you know, it can be understood from a Vedic perspective. And you look at all the ancient Vedic literature and even the mythos, there's always been this understanding, this appreciation that we live in a relative world. We live in a material, physical world, and on that plane of material existence, everything is temporal. Nothing exists for always, and this was indeed the principle of impermanence, which the Buddha recognized. So even in that, we understand that there's death. Something exists, and then something ceases to exist. So we have birth and death coexisting. And in that cycle of birth and death, we can see actually how important it is that those two things do coexist. Imagine if there was no death. We would have a very crowded planet, and we would be kind of limited in our evolution, and our adventure as beings would be somewhat restricted to the earth alone. So what is vital is that we understand that opposite forces are not opposed, but they're in relationship. And there is this connection between light and dark, good and bad, night and day. There's always been this interplay of opposites, heaven and hell, and right and wrong, dharma and adharma, you know, health and non-health, ignorance and enlightenment. And so there's always been forces that were positive and aligned for growth and evolution, and then there's always been forces which stifle or oppose it. And what we see exists in our time is enormous increase in the number of light beings, people who are awakening and rising in consciousness and understanding, whose hearts are becoming more open and their minds are becoming more wide in their scope and able to discern and make connections and also see beyond the veil of opposites into the unity of all things. And what we also have is this increase in darkness also. Darkness and destruction is rising up, and it's kind of challenging the increase in consciousness. And so if you looked at these two sides, light and dark, and just think of them in terms of they both want to grow, like a business or a company or a corporation, they're all interested in growing and increasing their market share, more profitability. So light beings wish for greater love and unity and more freedom and creativity and lightness and joy and all those qualities. And the darkness wants centralized power. It wants control, wants more money. It wants the decrease of freedom and the increase of bondage. And so these essentially forces which are interacting on the planet and have always. The scales and the proportions just vary. So we've had times, as we know, different yugas, the sages spoke about these long expanses of time, and there being different levels of radiance at different times. So we have an age of gold and an age of silver and an age of bronze and an age of lead, or an age of enlightenment and an age of ignorance. You know, Satyuga, Kali Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Treta Yuga. And so in all of these times, as you know, in the most radiant time, it was said that Dharma, which is that force of righteousness and purity, was at fullness. And then with the next age, there was a slip and there was three quarters Dharma. And then it went down to 50-50 in the third age. And in the fourth age, the age of ignorance and darkness and sin, Kali Yuga, Dharma goes down to just a quarter.
And just saying we are now in Kali Yuga.
Yes, some commentators believe we're in Kali Yuga. Others believe that we've transitioned out of it. And there's some conjecture there. But we can say that there's no need to really enter into that debate. I think we just look for the evidence. You know? People say, oh, this is an age of enlightenment. I'll say, look at McDonald's. Look what's happening in the Amazon. Look at the way government is. Look at our education system, our health systems. Do you really think we're in an age of full enlightenment? So I think we just have to look to the evidence around us. And we do see this wonderful increase in human flourishing, in human awareness. Never before have we been sharing these ideas and being so had so much insight into the workings of creation itself and even human-based institutions. You know, there's so much knowledge available on the planet right now. So we essentially have the force of light and dark, and it's beautifully represented in the, you know, the Chinese tradition in that yin-yang symbol, whereas you have a circle and then it sort of has a snake line running through the center, creating two curves, one's light and the other side's dark. And then inside the light, there's a little circle of dark. And inside the dark, there's a circle of dark or light. So you see that that symbol in very much was whoever cognized that and insight into this interplay of opposite forces and how they form, darkness and light forms the whole. And there would never be a time on this planet where there's an absence of that. And darkness lives inside every human being, but so does light. And in fact, that's what we're made of. That's our essential nature. And I believe what the problem has been is because our nature is to be loving and kind and to be considerate and understanding and want what's best for our fellow man, but we've been conditioned through our societal and human systems to become non-cooperative or non-collaborative. We compete for resources. Like, it's ridiculous that we all leave our kids and our homes and our families and we go out to a job which is based on competition. Once upon a lot time, there was, in tribal cultures, there was sharing, shared resources. It was a true democracy because everyone had equal power and equal say and equal participation. But our nature, essentially, is that we care. We genuinely care. You know, as soon as someone screams help, doesn't matter what you're doing, you don't run the other direction. You light up and go, okay, I need to help this person. Or I'm going to go and kick them when they're down. We don't do that. It's just not our nature. You know, and even all the spiritual traditions and practices are designed to unite someone with their nature, their essential nature as being consciousness or pure spirit. But what has happened is over time, human beings have been rendered incredibly passive. We've given away our power and we've abdicated to a higher authority. Our school teacher was the first authority, our parents probably before that. But we get handed over to these schools where there's someone in charge and we need to get permission to go to the toilet, to speak, to talk, to do anything, when to eat, what to move, how to think, what we need to do. So it happens there, and then it's also the government. And so human beings have just blindly accepted that this is life. This is how you have to live. What we have to realize is, no, that's just how we've been conditioned to live. And at this particular time, I feel there's this tremendous opportunity for human beings to realize we're actually all in this together, which is the biggest gift in this, because when there's a crisis somewhere on the planet, it's easy for those who aren't experiencing that to just ignore it, to pass it off. Like, we look at the conflict that was happening in the Middle East, in Afghanistan, now Iran and other places like that. To be honest, you in Bondi and me in Byron, we aren't touched by it. We don't see it. And it's not that we don't care. It's just that we don't have access to it, so it doesn't move us in the same way it moves the people who are on the front lines there. And in the same way, you know, another way to look at this coronavirus, this farce that many people think it is, are we that concerned about protecting children and elderly that we're willing to shut down the entire world and put people inside their homes? And how many people have died from the infection across the planet? A fraction when compared to how many people die every single day of starvation, a preventable disease. Yet what have we done for starvation? 25,000, mostly children, per day die. And when you could compare the two, you find there's this huge inequity in what we focus on as people and pay attention to or give concern to. And now I feel one of the gifts of that is the unity and the solidarity it's creating amongst us as fellow human beings. You know, we realize we're all on this planet, and ultimately what we want is we want everyone to be happy, to be free, to be healthy, to enjoy a comfortable life, and to have a good experience whilst they're here. And no one really wants to control or manipulate. Everyone wants, you know, a nice home and things like that, and there's nothing wrong with that. We can all have that. But what we see is that when you look at that yin yang symbol, or you look at, you know, that Vedic view of the fact that there are dark forces on the planet, they don't want that. That's in opposition to how they function. So you and I, we would know that stress feels terrible in our bodies, and the hormones of fear feels terrible, something innately, you know, wrong with it, and anger and frustration, etc. These all feel like a toxic sort of veil has been thrown over us when we feel such emotions and feelings. And what we want to do is be away from them as quickly as we can. So we right the wrong, or we make a correction, and then we feel back into our nature, which is loving, kind, calm, composed, centered. But there are said to be other people who operate off a different energy. These are known as the Rakshas, or those people who have a very destructive sort of nature. They get their food and their frequency and their sustenance through those feelings of feeling, feared and powerful and all of those. So for you and I, it's very difficult to understand that, you know, this such a thing could be happening on a planet where humans are being manipulated and being put into fear, or that fear is being deliberately manipulated because it's going to help other people achieve an agenda. So, you know, there's always been this play of good and evil in all things. And it's just there's a dominance of those manipulative forces in most of the institutions which are running the planet. That's the big problem. But when you look at the numbers, you'd find they're but a few people. When you look at however many people are on the planet, let's say there's 8 billion, those who are part of the, you know, the secret society, or the 1%, as you might call it, they're only able to have their power and dominion because the 99% acquiesces, gives away their power, and basically cooperates or fulfills their mandate from those authorities. But the moment we said, you know what, that doesn't work anymore, and we are going to refuse to operate or abide by those conditions that you've basically thrust upon us, the whole thing would collapse. And so you're seeing, you were mentioning at the start, you know, how do you manipulate people? Fear. Or by fining them $1,000 for meditating on a park bench. So those who don't cooperate, you threaten them with incarceration or fines or whatever else it may be. But if enough people resist, like look at during Gandhi's time, you know, it was illegal to get salt from the sea. And so what did he do? Him and his, I don't like to call them followers, but his comrades went to the ocean and then began gathering salt. And then they were set upon by, you know, the British military, and they were beaten, you know, within an inch of their life. And then more people saw how unjust it was, rose up and began to set aside, you know, their bodies and join the front lines. And through this non-violent movement of non-participation, they were able to basically overturn an entire British, you know, superpower through peaceful, non-violent, non-acceptance of certain behaviours. And it was just one thing after another. So it seems like we're revisiting that. But the problem is they're so intelligent, the people who are pulling these strings, that they'll veil it in a health crisis. And if you don't abide by the conditions, then you're uncaring, and then your own society will ridicule you and you'll be singled out. So there's mass manipulation. So I think more than ever, people need to, as you said, start looking for alternative sources or viewpoints and you're just challenging the narrative.
And turn off the mainstream media. That's a wonderful thing that people can be doing to eliminate fear.
Yeah. I mean, people are so trusting. Whatever you know, I saw a, and I'm sure you have too, when you drive along and there's a huge banner and it's, you know, where they're trying to get you to advertise and whatnot, and it says, unsee this sign. And you're like, you bastards. I so can't. You got me. That's brilliant. And the thing is, whatever we see, we register at some level. We can't not, because like the floodgates of the senses are open and that makes its way into our consciousness. So when people are watching the news, et cetera, that's just pouring in, seeping into their psyche, and it starts to really twist the ways in which they're processing information thereafter. You get tainted bit after bit, day after day, story after story. And that's really what the media is. It's a form of, you know, mass manipulation. And if you control the media, you control the government. And yeah. How that works for people that don't understand that, because media can whip up a storm and get the population in a frenzy. And as we mentioned before, though we didn't use it in these terms, we said the population has all the power and control. It's just they acquiesce and they give that power to an authority. But it's the population that has the control. So in order to get a government to do something or enact something, you first manipulate the media, which then whips up this fear storm in the population, and then the government is able to then step in and issue regulations or pass laws. Like imagine 3 months ago, if the government said, you know what, we're going to start fining people for meditating on park benches or for eating lunch on a park bench. Or even up here, I know someone that was in a car with three of their friends. They all got $1,000 fine each. If you drive an unregistered car, you don't pay a $4,000 fine. So we would have just said that's insane. But then they create a reason why that seems so legitimate, like why not a $200 fine or a $50 fine? It's wild. So the media is, you know, it's... And you look at who owns the world media, the entire world media, it's owned by just a handful of organizations. So they're very much able to pull the strings of the world. And what is their secret? Fear. Sensationalism. Get people into a state of hyperarousal, get them to contract, and then you have them. But what about if people were able to become fearless? Then none of that would work. And it's people like you and me and many, many others that are just not buying into it anymore. And I used to be a journalist once upon a time. And I used to be, you know, when I was studying, I remember I was a part of a News Corp. And back in those days, this is very early days, we used to have to sit in a room where we'd get different broadcasts from around the world. And you would pick up on basically the worst thing you could. And then that would be your story you would go away and write about. So they were just the journalists themselves were hypersensitive to any form of negativity. And then you would go back to your desk and you would either have a brief, or you would have a press release, or you would do some investigation yourself, which doesn't really happen. Reporters mostly repeat information. They don't investigate the veracity of something. So then you would go in and then you would sensationalize it even more. And this is that clickbait idea, which is, you know, you think of the worst thing or the thing that's going to capture human attention and get them to read and buy in. So the whole movement of the media is basically, if it bleeds, it leads. Let's look for the thing which is most alarming and concerning and really going to get people to read it and buy in. So we have to really look at what the media is doing and has done historically and realize the only way it's going to change if I just fail to buy into it, fail to participate.
Yeah. As you said, become powerful and own your power. And I think that I kind of answered my own question throughout when you were speaking in, you know, how do we kind of deal with these negative forces? And I think it's to not retaliate or resist is just shine our light and you know, tap into the opposite to the Rakshas, opposite to the demoniac forces, yeah. The light beings and just completely, I've talked about it before in terms of depression, and it's the same thing with depression. You know, it's not a society, it's within yourself that you're having negating thoughts. What do? You don't try to reject those thoughts. You don't try to stop the drug addiction habit. You just increase the pure things in your life, and then naturally when the light comes, the darkness will go. So I think that's the solution. And like what you said about a big thing with this is coming together, I really think. And it seems like they're not opposing forces, the dark and the light. It seems the more like this dark or the evil is like it is now, it's almost a catalyst for huge, I guess, enlightenment and evolution.
That's the thing, you know, that's the gift of the dark, is it comes to challenge. And in time of such, as we've said before, acquiescence and apathy, the darkness rises to actually prompt people to awaken and to dive into action. So I think from the ultimate perspective, if, you know, as people start to go down the rabbit hole, they start to feel themselves feeling, you know, the darkness in different ways, you know, feeling down, feeling heavy, feeling like confused and lost, and that's absolutely, you know, the first response that you'll have. But then as you transition out of that, you see actually there's a blessing in this. You know, we need both. We need bacteria, we need viruses, we need all of these forces, because without challenge, your immune system doesn't get stronger. You know, without challenging your muscles, they don't get stronger. Without running and pushing your limits, you don't get greater cardiovascular health. Like, everything needs a challenge. And so, you know, the sattva, the purity of its people, they need to be challenged. We need to be awoken. And so the darkness or destructive forces, they're the gift, and we shouldn't hate them for what they're doing. They're following their nature. They're playing their role. And the problem is we just haven't been playing ours. If we had, life wouldn't be like it is right now. And the problem is, you know, sattvic people are so trusting, whereas dark people are so manipulative. And so we don't stop to question, maybe someone doesn't have the same motivations as I do. And that's why it's so difficult for people to get their heads around, well, hang on, my government loves me. It wouldn't do anything like that. Well, have a look. Have a look. Adani? No one I know wanted Adani, that mind, to go in and threaten, you know, Great Barrier Reef and everything else, and even to be using more fossil fuels. No one I know. Yet, they still got approved. How the hell? It's really because the system is rigged to serve the many, to serve the corporations and not the people. It's not a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. It's for the corporations. And that's just a fact. And if people can't accept that, I think they need to really do some research. But ultimately, you know, the dark is a gift. So what we should do as we start to look into it is not to feel the heaviness of it all, but actually give thanks. Show your love and appreciation for those dark forces.
Salute it.
Absolutely. You know, you bow to it and you say, thank you for this blessing. And you move more into love and light and empowered thoughts and feelings, because that energy is what elevates you and takes you out of being controlled and manipulated and stuck. Because the problem is, when you look at dark and don't go beyond it, you become part of the problem. And we could say that darkness is an absence of creativity, innovation, awareness, courage, hope, all those things. And so as we start to get more consumed by the darkness, we're losing all of that. But if we're not aware of those forces, which, let's face it, most people aren't, that's a real problem. Ignorance ain't bliss. Ignorance is a disaster. But the problem is as people look into that, they start to feel so awkward and uncomfortable that they just back away from it. So I think the key thing for people to do, and it's very, very subtle, is just to appreciate it as the play of creation, light and dark, and realize that it's your role to be aware of those forces, not to identify with them, not to resist them, but to actually love them and then give your energy to the opposite. As you know, Dan Millman wrote a great book. It was called Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and is a classical, you know, guru student teacher setup. And so Dan Millman, he kind of called his teacher Socrates because he reminded him of that character. And anyway, Socrates said to him that you shouldn't put your energy into fighting the old. Such a thing is foolish. He said you should put it into building the new. And that's where people need to direct their energies, cultivating a state of freedom, of aliveness, of empowerment. And that's what we need. We need educated, empowered, conscious people who can't be manipulated by fear anymore, because fear is the poison to the soul. And it dulls the light of the world.
I have a quote from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, which explains that. It says, "Let the impurities of the atmosphere find a refuge in the ocean of purity in your heart, in the unfathomable joy of your inner pure conscious."
Yeah, it's beautiful. And ultimately, you know, when I sit with these people and you tune into these people and you sit inside their experience, I feel really sorry for them, to be honest. You know, these people who are manipulating, their lives are so empty and vacuous and dark, and they have no joy and love. They can't trust anybody. They're really out just to gain control and manipulate. Like, what a hell these people live in, day out. It's a horrible, you know, thing to sign up for. I really feel a lot of, you know, compassion towards them. Because they live in a hell. Like, could you imagine if we go back to that story of Columbus? Like, think of the reality that the natives were living in. They were literally living a heaven on earth, and they were so willing to share it. They didn't have this idea of control and ownership or everything else. And so that poor other guy who thought, you know, he would be remembered as, you know, a great soul and could empower them, could enslave them. What a miserable person.
Yeah.
You know, people transition into their soul experience. Oh, what a misery. And, you know, you basically do what you are. So negative, destructive people, they don't know how to do anything else other than breed more negativity. And so we as, you know, more pure people or, you know, natural people can't help but spread, you know, goodness around unless we get poisoned by fear.
I want to talk about collective, relationships and alliances, because I think that's a big thing coming out of this pandemic. And, you know, transcending the fear of wanting happiness only for ourselves. And that can, you can stress on that, you know, you can think, oh, you know, I'm stressing about and thinking about myself and how to, you know, get more and be more protected. And, but I think there's a beautiful, and I'm seeing like a global vision of humanity making decisions for the collective and for the earth. And for the earth to be more heavenly. And how can we, I guess, and I feel that and it's in the collective, so whether people are feeling it themselves, which I would say quite a few would be a lot, how can they, I guess, increase that? And
I think it's a real mixed bag, you know, and there seems to be, you know, on this collective journey right now to absolutely having to look at our lives and ourselves, and the ground's moving beneath our feet and everything's so uncertain and everything else. So people have gone through, I think, their own personal reaction initially to, oh, my God, my business, or this thing's happened, or I've lost my job, or how am I paying my rent this week? And I think as people sort of surrender into that, they're able to go through the subtler dynamics of it all. And I believe, yeah, what you're talking about is something that many, many millions of people are experiencing, which is, hang on, I've got this love and concern for my fellow man and woman and all these other cultures around the world, where actually it's breaking down all the barriers between us. and all the differences are actually so insignificant now, because we've suddenly revealed that, hang on, we're all so vulnerable, and we're all, you know, part of this one family. And what do you want your family to do? You want every member of your family to be happy. You want them to be free. You don't want that exclusively. You don't want to be happy while your brothers and sisters are miserable, because there's no joy in that. And so there is this incredible opening and elevation of the human heart happening. And we know that there's those extremes, you know, love and fear. And so there is this awakening of love and care. And look at, you know, everyone's in lockdown, and even the principle behind that is, well, I don't want anyone else to get sick. You know, so there's love in that too. I don't want to infect anybody, or I don't want to be infected myself, but more it's, I don't want to infect anyone else to get infected.
One of the initial reason actually I wanted to interview for the podcast was way before this started. I've always had you in my mind to interview you on a topic that you once did an Instagram post, and it had a strong influence in my life, and it was related to the coronavirus as well. Is you were questioning, are we really meant to be working 9 to 5 in this world? And I think a lot of people are having this question.
Yeah.
And I especially there's going to be a big shift in what we call dharma, which is like, what is the most evolutionary thing you can be doing? Is it really going to work 9 to 5? And that had a big impact with me, and there's a lot of dynamism to it, because, you know, I work a lot, it's my nature. But for me also, it's dharma, so, but also I can also see, you know, obviously I'm, you know, my body also cops it sometimes. So yeah, like let's explore that. It's so fascinating, because say with the dharma and adharma and all this, because recently you know, I saw my guru Dr. Raju and the senior Raju, and he, you know, visits when I'm in India. You know, I see him a few times throughout the couple months I'm there, and always at the end of my stay he'll come and he'll give me like the final word of advice, like what should I be doing for the next, you know, 9 months until I see him next. And last time, which was a few months ago, or late last year, it was just work a lot, be like a Maharishi, like travel in a new country every day. That's what and he's never given me that piece of advice. So yeah, let's just discuss that.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it comes back to that initial point I made was, you know, we live in a particular way that's been designed. There's been a certain engineering to human interaction, and it wasn't always the way it is now. And we often think, oh, these primitive cultures, and we've descended out of that. And I think that's a misrepresentation. So for me, I really feel there needs to be an integration of these old ways of living into this new technological age that we're in now. There needs to be a synthesis. And so that would be something unique. That would be a dawn of a new reality on the planet, you know, moving from, you know, hunter-gatherer to agrarian to industrial to, you know, technological, and then somehow infusing that more traditional way into our ways of living on the earth. But, you know, just questioning the fact of, well, should life be the way it is, or this is just it? And when you understand, well, that's just the way it was passed down to us. But at some point, all systems fail, you know, all of them, all ways of communicating. You know, we used to use pigeons. It's just laughable, right? We used to put little notes tied onto a pigeon's leg and send them a flight, and then that would be received somewhere else, and they would read the note and put another one on there and then send it back. And that was a form of communication. And then, you know, things evolved over time, and radio waves were discovered, and then we were communicating through the atmosphere with wires, and then it was, you know, without wires, and look at where we are now. So it seems like we're living in a pigeon society, where so many of our systems just don't fit with what human beings actually need to thrive and be happy on the planet. You know, working and spending the best part of your day you know, in a building or in some institution or doing something which, when you look at it, isn't really progressing society. Like, is that the best use of my life energy? And the problem is we've all just bought into it, and if you don't buy into it, you're destitute. So now more than ever, there's never been a better time for a whole system redesign. And it's going to happen, like, involuntarily for a lot of people too, because a lot of their jobs are going to cease to exist. You know, a lot of people have been made redundant. A lot of businesses have, you know, turned belly up. There's this whole recalibration and correction going on. So that's why we can look at this, is there's just a correction. We're being asked to reassess. And the problem I feel that we have is we don't have enough vision or enough visionaries. And it's these visionaries that we need, because they can give us an insight into a glimpse of what's possible for humanity. And we've had a number of these people. But we really need to start celebrating them more and getting these people into huge think tanks, and then starting to look at, okay, how do we do this? How do we actually get life to function and thrive globally for all beings, including the planet itself? And we could do it, and we're seeing how quickly we can lock everyone down, like literally every single person on the planet. Unless you're some sadhu living in the thick forest, you know, in India or in the Himalayas or something, everyone has been impacted without exception. This is just unbelievable, because even in times of, you know, war and famine, there's always like large portions of the population who are untouched, even in world wars. But now, like, literally everybody has been impacted. That in itself is phenomenal. What we're showing is just the power of action. If we wanted to, we could change any system overnight, whether it be our energy system, our banking system, anything. If we put our energy into it, it gets done. It's just been there's a lack of coordination and agreement and initiative, and I guess mutual benefit, because what we're seeing, a lot of the initiatives benefit the few, not the many. So this could, you know, be a time where we have this massive coordinated movement and redesign. And I think we have to really start to just sit in the question, not just, oh my God, look at all this, is what's happening, this is terrible, and what's you know, my job going to be like, or what's this going to happen, or et cetera, et cetera, sitting in the uncertainty, whereas sit in the question, what could life become? How could we redesign this? How can we recreate or create a new society, a new way of living? What that look like? How could that be?
Definitely going to be a radical change. And
at the same time, it's incredibly exciting. And if we were to embrace that collectively, go, okay, we actually don't want to go back to the world how it was. You know, let's do something new. Let's dream a new dream. Let's create a new vision and movement for society. Yeah.
I'm totally with you on that, Gary. I just feel that the inertia in the collective is too, the majority, there's too much inertia. So I don't know. I think again, it's going to be a minority dreaming that. Sorry to be a bit pessimistic, but that's just what I'm feeling, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's a feeling. Yeah, I guess a lot of people are, like I said, moving in and out of different phases. But if we look at what's the opportunity here, it's that.
Yeah.
To start to transition into a new society, a society that's for all. And it can happen, but people need to believe it, and people need to give their energy to that, rather than what fear asks you to do is give your power to someone else who says they're going to take care of you or has all the solutions, when we know generally those solutions are for keeping things as they are or for reducing our freedoms and liberties.
And I guess it's
we have to transition out of fear into fearlessness.
Yeah. And just correcting myself on that. It's just starting with myself, like enjoying it myself and just radiating from the beautiful, like I'm already loving what's been happening. I'm loving the time off. I've been reading. I've been going to the bush and just chilling out, like, and just beaming off the change yourself.
Yeah.
And then that's essentially your reality.
Yeah.
You have to be concerned about if the others are going to come to it. Start with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to keep your spirit high and your spirit positive. And so there has to be like a, you know, and it's a day-to-day thing. This is like a massive, like, I don't know what you would call it. It's like a spiritual boot camp everyone's been enlisted into. It's like evolve and progress or just perish, you know, drown in your suffering. Like, honestly, like, people don't know what it's like to be stuck in a house, you know, and not be able to just do what they always do, go and get a coffee and hang out with your friends and go to work and do this and that. Like, it's just a phenomenal sort of thing that people are going through completely involuntarily and en masse. And yet in it is this opportunity to really know thyself. What is it, all the ways you've been conditioned to live and to think, and discover all these aspects of yourself which previously have never been challenged to rise to the surface, and all the things that we take for granted and all the things that we bind to and identify with. Like, for example, just the idea that there is certainty in life and security in, you know, your business and wealth and these things, and then before you know it, it's gone. Literally overnight, people's realities were turned on their heads. And who are you after that? Are you so identified with your position in a company or a role that you play and no longer in that role? What happens to you? For most people, it's destruction. You know, you get completely lost. And in that is the loss of an idea or an identification, but there's an opportunity to discover something else, part of you which is never lost or never consumed. That's what, you know, the spiritual teachings and practices are so important right now, because they identify us with the self, you know, the consciousness, the formlessness within the form, or the spirit that's playing within this world of form. And when you can identify with that, first and foremost, you're able to more easily disidentify with the surface of life and all of the plays of light and dark that are happening. And you can more enjoy the show. Like, honestly, we do this every time we go to the cinema or turn on Netflix or whatever. There's this interplay, and there's never a good screenplay unless there's conflict. You watch a film without conflict, generally it's a pretty boring film. So, you know, we kind of like to see it. The problem is we don't like to experience it in our own life. Yet conflict brings with it, it's a harbinger for growth and it's a gift, because it's alerting us to all of the inconsistencies within our own consciousness and just how we operate. And I think the easiest way for people to understand this concept is just, you have pure light that then passes through a film plane, and by virtue of that pure light moving through a film plane, there's a projection on that screen. And we could say that projection on that screen, that's life as you know it, life as you experience it. But what's that born of? It's born of basically all of the texture, all of the color, all of the thought forms, all of the ideas and beliefs and structures and patterns. That's all born of the mind. And so what these times do, it gives us an opportunity to really know our own human condition, all the hidden matter, all the stuff that's in our psyche that shapes how we think and feel every day. And it gives us an opportunity as consciousness, as the light, moving through all that, to actually reconfigure and adjust our perception and our ideas and our beliefs and to elevate them. And so that's what crisis does. It gives you an invitation to really raise your thinking and alter your perception, because some people could say this is a crisis. Other people say this is a gift. Certainly might feel like a crisis right now, but with a broader view, you understand it's a birthing process. Like, if you're someone who'd never witnessed human birth before, if you came from a planet where people were just born by thought alone, they just manifested, and you came to the earth and you saw a woman mid-birth, you know, howling and roaring with the contractions, you think, oh, my God, this is heavy. What's this all about? This looks so painful. But if you just keep the camera rolling, you'd realize, oh, it's all part of the beautiful design to bring a human body into the world. And you'd see the gift in it all. And it's like that right now. It's kind of looks like it hurts, but something's being born. And it, what takes birth from here, what really forms from this birth, is dependent on each and every person's mental position, where their consciousness is at, what they're feeding, and what they're believing. And I think that's the mandate. We really just need to seize this opportunity to make sure that in ourselves and in our circle that we're feeding the positive and not allowing ourselves to be manipulated, but really being empowered just by the very fact that we are all equal. You know, that's true democracy. Everyone has equal power, and we are most powerful when we're empowered individually and when we unite collectively. So we've just got to stay strong right now, essentially. Stay out of the fear, as we keep saying.
Yeah.
That's step one. And then just start to become indifferent to it, and then to become inspired by it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Give thanks, and, like we said.
It's and as you said, once you've, you know, done that first step and, you know, familiarized yourself with being, then you can start again enjoying the relative, but people are going to start enjoying different things than the relative. They're not going to be worried about, you know, a number on a computer in their bank account. It's going to be like connecting back to nature, like food, like where's your food come from, growing your own food, where do you get your water from, like what if all those systems can't, you know, you can't rely on getting stuff from across the world. What's local to you, and being increased in locality of, you know, your the land you're on. Wonderful things. And just to add to like the importance of the mind, as Yayo was saying, you've got to, with this vast field of possibility, it's what you, what the state of your mind is. There's some people have heard of multiple personality disorder, which actually is, it's not called that anymore. They changed it. It's called dissociative identity disorder, because it's really an issue with your identity, and it's quite a serious disease. It affects quite, it's a rare disease, but it's serious. But and interestingly, someone can identify. So if someone, for example, a person, they can eat, say, blueberries. Blueberries are good. They enjoy them. They digest them easily. But as soon as they switch identities, they can become really allergic to the blueberries and have adverse reactions. And they're the same body, same person, but they've just changed their identity. And that's the power of the mind. So we can really shape what's coming.
It's good to look at how has the mind been shaped.
Yeah.
You know, the collective mind, the human mind.
Take an active role in that.
Yeah. Yes, know thyself.
Is there anything else you want to mention?
I just think, you know, one thing that's endured through this whole thing for me is just the beauty and the sacredness of the natural world. You know, 2 days ago I witnessed one of the most spectacular sunsets I'd ever seen in my life. Every day it feels like the natural world is communicating and saying, hey, guys, I understand your struggle, and I guess you have some appreciation for mine too. But know that I'm here and the natural world really loves us. You know, we are children of the earth, all of us. And I think this, you know, what we're experiencing is a human problem. It's a human drama. And our life has become so enmeshed with our economy, which is one of the biggest problems. And that's one that doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon. But it seems the natural world, you know, was one of those key ingredients of all traditional cultures. It's something that they had such, you know, reverence for and just deep love, because they realized that was the ultimate power that sustained their existence. So first and foremost, they realized they were stewards or custodians of the earth, and they had to secure its purity for generations to come. So I think while we're all going through what we're going through, like, you know, just connecting with, you know, the planetary body, connecting with forests and trees and the ocean and all those things. And you realize when you're there, like, there's no problem. They have no problem with the economy, the forest or the trees. You go to the ocean, like, what coronavirus? What is this thing? It's, you know, purely a human problem. And so I think one of the ways people can get away from it is just to really tap back in. Like you said, you've been going to the forest a lot, and a lot of people I know, that's their medicine at the moment. They're just getting away from all of the, you know, the human debris and all of the other frenzy of ideas and media, et cetera, and just tapping back into the earth. And I think, you know, our new society has to put the planet at the forefront of, you know, what we need to protect. So I think just getting into the natural world, that's my medicine at the moment. Obviously, you know, spiritual practice, et cetera, meditation and yoga and getting the body well and thriving. But I think it's just a beautiful reminder. Nature's always there saying, I love you, I care for you. Don't forget what's most important and what's enduring, because this will all pass. You know, we'll move through this storm. But it's a wonderful way for us to look beyond ourselves and our own petty needs, to look at life, you know, with a 10,000-year view or a 1,000-year view. What do we want our grandchildren, our great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren to be experiencing on the planet? And it's not fascism or totalitarianism like you were mentioning. It's something else.
Okay, beautiful. So if you guys want to check out more from Gary's work, you can follow him on Instagram, Gary Gorrow. And that's like basically where you post the most knowledge and wisdom, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably, you know, my main platform these days. And I'm, like everyone else, looking to create more of a contribution online now. And so, yeah, people can check in with me there and we'll get on the journey.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you for listening. So share this with people who need it. I think you can figure out which one of your friends, family, peers, community need to hear this. Support the show that way. Leave a review, subscribe on iTunes. We've got some goodness coming up. And check out the other shows. That's all for now. I'm Dylan Smith, and I love you.